Power Records presents...
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me, as always, is...
Chris Franklin.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great. We're back for another Power Records episode. We've been producing these at a little faster clip lately, which I'm very, very happy about. And for this episode, Chris and I talked about it. And for the last couple of shows, we've been kind of doing real off-brand stuff. We did the Lone Ranger, Hollow Man, Gemini Man, Little Women. So we thought maybe for this episode, we would kind of go back to like a meat and potatoes sort of thing, or in my case, like a tofu and potatoes thing, and talk about some Batman adventures. Now, of course, some of you that have been following the Fire and Water Podcast Network for a long time might say, wait a minute, didn't you guys already do these records? Yes and no. I did the two stories we're going to be talking about. Again, they're both Batman. Robin Meets Man-Bat and If Music Be the Food of Death, starring the Riddler. I did this Riddler story back when I was still doing Power Record episodes of the Fire and Water Podcast, when I would take a week off from Shag, and boy, I needed it. And then Chris and I actually did this Man-Bat record on a Fire and Water Podcast episode, but that was a long time ago, and B, not part of the actual Power Records Podcast. So I thought, I want to have all the Batman records as part of this show, so sue us, we're going to do these again.
Right, yeah, and that was actually my very first podcast, because Rob from his, and I've said this before and he loves it when I say this, from his van, he enticed me into it with his candy, and thus my podcasting career began.
Oh, that's horrible. That's just horrible, Chris. So we thought it would be fun to talk about these two really, really superb Batman audio adventures, and we'll get to them in a moment, but first we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I have got Batman by Neil Adams trade paperback book 2. In this volume, artist Neil Adams is paired for the first time with acclaimed writers Denny O'Neill as their definitive take on Batman Begins. Batman Begins, there you go. These tales include the Dark Knight's encounters with Deadman, the return of Man-Bat. Actually, it's the first encounter with Man-Bat. An unusual team-up with enemy Ace and more. Collects the Brave and the Bold, number 86 and 93, Detective Comics, number 395, 397, 400, which is first appearance of Man-Bat, 402, 404, 407, 408, and 410, Batman 219, plus numerous covers. The regular price is $24.99. In-stock trade price is $14.49. You save 42%.
Good deal. I like the trade dress on these editions, too, like the monochromatic back cover, and then Neil Adams drawing in like the little center, and they're using the 60s Batman logo. Those are really sharp-looking books.
Yeah, I really like those. Now, I don't have this. I had some of the Batman illustrated by Neil Adams, a previous iteration of these books, and I don't know if these contain the redrawings that Neil Adams did or not, but because they're divisive. I think pretty much everybody's divided on the camp that's like, yeah, we don't like that. They've been special editioned. I don't know if these are or not, but either way, at that price, you're going to get a lot of good Neil Adams stories, and you're definitely going to get like the first few Man-Bat stories. So it definitely ties into this episode.
Absolutely. My pick is the Batman Silver Age Newspaper Comics Hardcover Volume 3, 1969 to 1972. Now, Chris, I don't know how much of the Batman newspaper strip, either iterations, the 40, actually there were three, I guess. There was the 40s one, and there was the 60s one, and then there was even the 90s one, like the tied in for the movie. I don't know how much experience you have with any of these, but listen to this. I haven't read some of these. Listen to this description. This blew my mind. The final volume of the Silver Age Batman newspaper comics features a veritable who's who, hey, of Gotham City and beyond. Superman, Green Arrow, the Penguin, Joker, Mad Hatter, Riddler, Scarecrow, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Two-Face, Catwoman, Batgirl, Killer Moth, Poison Ivy, Black Canary, plus the introduction of the mysterious Man-Bat. And if that wasn't enough, included are the 4 months of rare 1972 strips that were created by the Ledger Syndicate without DC's input, in which Batman was no longer featured, although Bruce Wayne continued as a character. What? What? Why? Why would you? Huh?
All I know is if I remember right, that strip went into, they introduced some character named Galaxio or something.
Oh, that's that strip? That's the Galaxo stuff?
Yeah. Okay. And like they turned the Batman strip into something else. It was kind of like when that British publisher turned Captain Marvel into Marvel Man that became Miracle Man, I guess, in a weird sort of way, but even weirder.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
That is nuts. I knew the Galaxo thing, but I don't think I knew that they literally phased Batman out of his own strip. That's insane. So it features an introduction by Batman expert Joe Deseris, and the book includes all strips from June 1, 1969 through April 29, 1972. It's by IDW. We know they do quality work, especially when it comes to these newspaper collections. Page count is 256. Normal price, $49.99. In-stock trades price, $34.99. You save 30%. So for these and all your other trade paperback needs, visit instocktrades.com, and we thank them for their support. All right, Chris, we're here to talk about Robin Meets Man-Bat, and if music be the food of death. Are you on the same page, as me, in that of all the characters that Power Records did, and they did a lot, as we all know, I think ultimately the Batman was best served of all the characters by Power Records in terms of how perfect his adventures were, in terms of how they felt like what you might read in the comics, in terms of consistency, voice performance, music. I feel like of all the characters, Spider-Man, I would say, is a close second, but Batman, I think, ultimately is like the Power Records character.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's the fidelity to the comics of the time. Yeah. And I mean, there's a little bit, we'll get into the Riddler, there's a little bit of the 60s TV show peppered in there. But the 60s TV show was still an influence in the comics in a lot of ways, too. But yeah, I mean, because you can definitely slot this Robin Meets Man-Bat, right? It could be Detective Comics number 419 or something. And you know, you could definitely, you totally buy it. Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't help that it doesn't hurt that Neil Adams is, of course, involved in art on either the sleeves or interior comic book art, and, you know, along with probably a good chunk of assistance from his continuity studios. Yeah, I mean, I agree completely that they nailed the 70s Batman, and it's interesting because, you know, there's really no other media of the time that tried to capture the Bronze Age Batman because, I mean, let's face it, the Filmation Batman that we got in the 70s was still pretty much the 60s Batman. And the Super Friends, although his ears were longer, he was still pretty much the 60s Batman, too. Yep, so, yep. You know, this is the other media version of the Creature of the Night Bronze Age Batman.
Yeah, these are moody, atmospheric as all get out. And as Chris just said, it doesn't hurt that they got Neil Adams to do a lot of the work for this stuff. So let's get right to it. The first story we're going to do, Robin Meets Man-Bat.
It is 3 a.m. at the Gotham First National Bank, and the clicking noises you hear are the tumblers of a lock, magnified many times by intricate amplification equipment.
That's a boy, Mitch. You're doing fine. We're almost home.
The lock belongs to First National's maximum security walk-in vault, but to three highly specialized bank robbers, no security seems to be maximum enough.
Hey, that does it. She's ready to open.
All the other alarms have been shut off. Help me pull the door.
All that money. A Federal Reserve deposit of millions. Waiting for us just on the other side of that door.
Jeez, Mitch, this thing is 2 feet thick.
Okay, I'm helping.
Almost. Just a little more.
Good evening, gentlemen. We're glad you could drop by.
Batman!
Don't you fellas know it's polite to knock first?
And Robin, they were waiting inside.
No, it isn't fair. What did they know?
Every crook makes at least one mistake, Trench, and your gang is no exception.
Your mistake was falling for the phony news item Batman planted about a huge Federal Reserve deposit in this branch.
Hey, what are we running here at the bait? Let's plug them!
You're on top of us already!
Robin and I prefer a fight without guns, and we expect the same from you.
Batman, look out! The third one has another gun? Not a gun, boy wonder. Something far more useful.
The bank robber flips a switch on the strange circuit-studded gadget in his hand, and at once the air is filled with a piercing, ear-splitting sound.
Ears.
Oh, me too, Robin. I can't even think straight.
That's
the whole idea behind our sonic disruptor, Batman. A few more seconds of this, and you and a punk will be on the floor in agony.
Yeah, while we stand back and enjoy the show, thanks to the special high-frequency earplugs the three of us are wearing.
Oh, covering my ears as tight as I can. It doesn't help.
Hold on as long as you can, Robin. Fight it.
Yet not even the dynamic duo can withstand the terrible onslaught of sound for long. And as they drop to their knees...
Seeing this was worth getting beat up for.
From every direction, the nightmarish screeching sound seems to surround them until the bank robbers look up to see a frightening form circling above their heads. A creature the size of a man with the unmistakable ears and leathery wings of a bat.
What is it?
It's the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
Sonic Disruptor doesn't even phase it. I'm getting out of here.
Me too.
Wait for me.
In the frenzied confusion, the Sonic Disruptor falls, and its ear-splitting drone ceases at once as the cowled Crusader and the Boy Wonder look up to see...
Batman! That thing! It's going after the bank robbers!
I know, Robin.
Hey! Put me down! It's got me in its claws!
Look out! He's dropping you on top of him!
Do you believe this? It slammed two of them together. Now it's pulling the third crook into the air.
Help!
And knocking him senseless into the side of the wall. What a show! The creature's flying away, Batman. Let's go after it.
No, Robin. The least we can do in gratitude for its help is to leave Man-Bat in peace.
Man-Bat? You know this guy? Monster, whatever he is?
Yes, and I know he must be in great pain right now. That's why he flew off.
I don't understand.
Like a true bat, Man-Bat's hearing is ultra-sensitive to even the minutest sounds. If you think that Sonic Disruptor was rough on us, I'd hate to imagine how it must have felt to him.
He must be a very brave man. He is a man, isn't he?
Robin, I think it's time you heard the full story of my friend Kirk Langstrom. Kirk Langstrom, the eminent nocturnal mammal expert, had long been a fan of mine and a supporter for everything the name Batman stood for. Well, it was several years ago that hundreds of hours of hard work finally brought him on the verge of an incredible discovery in the confines of his lab under the Gotham Museum.
That does it, my leathery winged friend. I've taken the final dose of my serum. Now we wait, you and I.
The friend Langstrom spoke to was a live bat, and the serum was a specially prepared gland extract he had derived from the creature for human consumption. He later told me he came up with the serum as a gift for me, but being the thorough scientist he was, tested the serum on himself first. And at first, the results seemed impressive.
Oh, that infernal noise is unbearable. What in heaven's name can be causing so much racket?
Langstrom was both startled and tremendously excited when he traced the noise to its source, astonished to discover it was nothing more than...
A dripping faucet! But to me, it sounded like splashing tidal waves. My hearing has become incredibly sensitive. The first bat characteristic that proves my serum is working.
And then the next sign became painfully apparent when Langstrom rushed to his desk to jot down some notes.
Ah! My eyes! I can't stand the light of that desk lamp. I've got to put on my sunglasses. They're in my jacket.
Once he found the dark lenses, he put them on and switched off the light, only to get a third surprise.
I'm navigating in utter darkness without bumping into a thing. My vocal cords are emitting ultrasonic signals, and my super-sensitive hearing picks them up when they bounce back. I've done the impossible. I now possess the natural radar of a bat.
Yes, Langstrom had achieved the impossible, all right. Far more so than even his wildest imaginings. Because when he happened to look down at his hands...
Oh, my God! My hands! They're growing hairy, with claws, like a bat. I don't understand. Can this be a side effect of the gland extract? I'll put on some gloves. It's only temporary. It has to be.
But while preparing to go out, he encountered still another ominous sign.
My hat! What pushed it off my head?
By now, Langstrom already knew the worst. But he had to run to a mirror to see the horrible, ghastly truth for himself.
I have giant ears, red eyes, fur instead of skin. This can't be happening. But it is. I've become a man bat.
Once the initial shock of his nightmarish fate had worn off, Langster remained at his museum lab late into the night, trying to discover where his serum had gone wrong. Until his work was interrupted by a ruckus in the jewelry exhibit upstairs in the museum. It was the Blackout Gang at work, a group that wore special equipment to enable them to operate in the dark. But that night, they were encountering opposition, namely, me.
It's Batman! We've got the advantage! We can see him, but he can't see us! Jump him!
I was badly outnumbered, but with that many rats in my back, anywhere I punched, my fist connected. I was holding my own well enough when all of a sudden...
I see it too, but I wish I didn't.
This freak is even worse than Batman.
Yes, Robin, that night I had a new ally as Batman and Man-Bat fought side by side to mop up the rest of the gang.
You all right, Batman?
Sure, friend. Thanks to you. There's so much I need to know about you.
No, it's all gone wrong. I want no part of you or anyone else.
Don't go. Come back. Let me try to help you. He flew off into the night, and it wasn't until months later that I learned that he was really Kirk Langstrom, and that his once noble mind had become dangerously unstable as a result of the serum.
That's some story, Batman. Did it ever have a happy ending?
Finally, after several months, I was able to catch up with him and administer the chemical antidote that turned Langstrom back to his human form. Everyone had high hopes for his recovery, especially when Langstrom decided to marry his fiancée, Francine, soon after that.
And then what happened?
They married, but by that time, Langstrom had relapsed into Man-Bat again. And he persuaded poor Francine to take the gland extract so that she, too, became a bat. It was his way of getting her to prove her love for him.
Man, those two have been through a lot.
And I thought the worst was behind them, until tonight. Poor Langstrom must have suffered another...
You took my man bat away! For that, you must die!
Look out! Langstrom's back! But he's not making sense!
Wait a minute, Robin. I think I understand. This isn't Langstrom!
Good grief! The thing has swooped up Batman!
Some creature of the night and a caped crime fighter locked themselves in furious and frenzied combat over Robin's head.
I've got to do something. I know. My utility belt.
Quickly, the teen wonder extracts a certain capsule and hurls it upward into the fray, where it breaks open in the face of Batman's monstrous opponent.
Good thinking, Robin. That sneezing powder ought to give me the advantage I need.
But just as Batman wrenches himself loose from the suffering creature, still another inhuman sound tears through the air. And as Batman agilely lands on the floor...
Oh, my gosh! Now there are two of them! The Man-Bats are fighting!
No, they're not! The second one is trying to calm down the first, and he needs help.
The masked Manhunter extracts a bat rope and a batarang from his utility belt, and with skills and reflexes honed to absolute perfection, he flings the batarang upward.
Right on, Batman! Your bat line is wrapping itself around both of them, binding them together.
Now they can't use their wings.
And without their wings...
Man-Bats don't fly.
But when the dynamic duo runs up to the grounded inhuman pair...
Look, Batman! The bigger one's got something in his hand. They're two hypodermic needles.
Now I know what to do.
And Batman does it, wasting no time and injecting each creature with one of the hypodermics.
Oh, they're changing. Losing their wings. Becoming human again. Becoming a man and a woman.
Oh, Kirk, I'm so sorry. I lost control of myself. To think I would try and kill Batman.
It's okay, honey. It was the serum warping your mind. You didn't know.
What happened, Kirk?
It's all a misunderstanding, Batman. I was long overdue from an expedition in South America, and poor Francine was worrying about me here at home.
Yesterday I was rummaging through Kirk's lab, very depressed, and I was so despondent I mistook the bat extract serum for my own drink. The next thing I knew, I was a bat.
Once the serum affected her mind, Francine became wildly insane. And when I finally got home this morning, I found frantic scrawls drawn all over the walls, blaming you, Batman, for my disappearance.
I get it. So you took a dose of the serum yourself, figuring the only way to stop a man-bat is with another man-bat.
That's right. But When I finally located you two a few hours ago, you were up against that terrible sonic disruptor. So I gave you a helping hand with those bank robbers.
I'll say you did. That must have been murder on your bat ears.
And while Kirk took some time to recover, Francine caught up with us and attacked.
Batman, can you ever forgive me?
I already have, Francine.
Well, I may never forgive you, Batman. Not unless you get around to introducing me to your friends.
Sorry, Robin. Kirk, Francine, I'd like you to meet my protege and junior partner.
And that was Robin meets Man-Bat. Chris, you've told me this is your all-time favorite power record?
Yes. Yes, it is. It is the one that I did not have the book and record set of this. I didn't have that until a very nice person graciously sent me one a few years back, a copy of that. But I had the LP that included this, Gorilla City, the Sherlock Holmes story, and the Catwoman story where Bruce Wayne becomes Catman, and that looks like Wildcat on the 45 sleeve.
That's right.
I bought, and famously, I know you love this story, Rob, because I bought this at the Super Fresh. No, that's Michael Bailey. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, our memories get confused sometimes. I bought this at Spark Supermarket here in Cynthiana, Kentucky. It was just I remember it being like on a wire rack. Now, why I remember this, I was probably like three or something, but it was on a wire, like little rack that was at the end of an aisle, you know, just like next to the, I don't know, frozen food section or something. It's really strange.
But your mom's going through the frozen peas and you're standing there looking at Man-Bat.
Hey, Mom, can I get this? You know, and because I was spoiled rotten, of course I got it. But, and I wore this out. And my parents, my dad in particular, for years would say, what was that thing you had with that Man-Bat, that screeching sound? It used to drive me nuts. I mean, they hate, you know, it drove them insane. And I mean, and what's really weird is when I listen to this now, my record, I wore it out when I was so young and listened to it over the years so much that there were skips and grooves in it. So there were parts where, you know, Batman's like, Robin, I think it's time I told you the full story of the Finkstrom, you know, and instead of Kurt Langstrom. I still hear Finkstrom when I listen to it. And there's whole gaps of this that are like missing. And until I, you know, came to your blog years ago, I hadn't heard the full version since I was probably like four or five, you know? So yeah, this is etched in my brain. I think I could reenact this particular story almost verbatim just from memory. And maybe that should be a stretch goal on Patreon. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Hey, we could do our own version of Robin Meets Man. But yeah, I mean, on paper, you first think, why of all the characters for them to do Man-Bat? Why would they bother with Man-Bat? But then you realize, of course, over when they were doing the Marvel records, they love their monster records. Power Records love the monsters. And this was their version of getting a DC story in with a monster, because it's Man-Bat. And this thing is actually an amalgamation of three different comics. It's an adaptation of Detectives 400, 402, and 407, which was sort of stretched out this story of Man-Bat, because, you know, it introduced Man-Bat, and then he came back, and then they did the thing with his wife. But this is compressed into one story. And considering when you know that this thing is a Frankenstein of three Man-Bat stories put together, it holds together pretty well. I mean, it moves very fast, obviously. They just don't have a lot of time for pausing. I mean, it's so odd that you know, Robin is like, who is this guy? And Batman's like, oh, I guess I should tell you now. I met a guy named Man-Bat a while ago. Like, really? You didn't tell me that before? Like, didn't you have time to talk about that at some point? You would think that would come up. Oh, by the way, I met a guy who's a half-man, half-bat creature. Funny thing that, Dick. But when you – considering that it's three comics sliced into one story – I think it actually holds together pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they created like new material. The whole everything with Robin's new, you know. But I mean, even in the flashbacks, they have, you know, I mean, it jumps from like some new artwork, but most of it's like, particularly the origins from Detective 400,
right.
And it's because it's either all Neil Adams or all Adams and Continuity Associates, it works together pretty well. Now, you can kind of tell when Neil Adams did just licensing art like this, sometimes his work isn't quite as I don't know. It's still great because it's still Neil Adams, but there's a few panels here and there that he probably would have redrawn before he submitted it to DC to publish in a regular comic, you know. But I mean, and you can kind of see a little discrepancies between the quality, but that's just to us nerds. The right. common person looking at this, common kid reading this, would never, they'd say, oh, cool, this has to be that one guy that draws all those covers at DC and, mm-hmm. you know, and did the Superman Muhammad Ali treasury, they did a great job. It's kind of like a clip episode with some new bridging sequences.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, hey, remember that time we met Mambo? I agree. There is some stuff that is probably wouldn't have appeared in an actual comic, but yeah, they had to throw a couple things together. I love the opening music and the sound effects where they're breaking into the vault and you get that mm-hmm. chick 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 sound. Like, that's really well done. And I love the sonar gun. And I love the effect in the comic book where all the color, it's all of a sudden done in like reds and pinks to suggest that they're being overwhelmed by this music sound. It's just really, really well done. I mean, you mentioned that this was done as a book and record. It was released as a 45 that came with a comic book, and then it was put on an LP along with those other some of those other Batman stories. So this thing did get repurposed. I have never seen a 45 only sleeve of this, like, it didn't come with a comic book, so I doesn't mean it doesn't exist, because we keep finding new Power Records, but as far as I know, it was only ever released in these two formats, on that one LP and then as the book and record. They never repurposed it. You know how Power Records re-released a lot of stuff in the early 80s with new art on it? Apparently this one never got redone, which is too bad, because I said I think it's a superb audio adventure.
Yeah, I mean, the sound design on this one, like you said, is just really super well done. All the, of course, the Man-Bat screeches are very memorable, as we said. But, I mean, just all the, from the origins, you know, the dripping faucet, that sounds like splashing tidal waves, you know, all that stuff is just really, basically the sound design in this, it created the comic book in my mind as a kid. When I saw the comic, and in fact, when I had the actual Detective Number 400 found in a back issue bin in the late 80s, you know.
Wow.
When I found it, and I have all the early Man-Bat appearances before they got like really pricey, and you know, reading those, I could just hear all the Power Records. This is what it matched what I had created in my mind. So kudos to Power Records. I mean, the comic is lovely, of course, it's Neil Adams, but you honestly don't need it because they mm-hmm. do such a fantastic job in this one. And there's so many, you know, different, you know, the locale is kind of centralized, but all the different sounds that are coming at you and even the two Man-Bats fighting, or the Man-Bat and the She-Bat. And I love Francine's accent. You took my Man-Bat away, and for that you must die. You know, just she's got that thick, you know, I don't know, is that a Jersey or a New York accent? What is
it's
that,
a little, Yeah, it's a little Brooklynese kind of, yeah, sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's all etched in my brain. I do love how in the comic, you know, basically, if you're paying attention, Francine's flying around topless.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. There's a whole panel dedicated to that, where there's not even any dialogue, where it's after Kirk has been transformed back into a human, he's there bare-chested, because of course, as Man-Bat he is, and then there's this panel where you see Batman put his cape around Francine, and there's no dialogue, so it's just the story pauses for a moment, because yeah, you realize, well, okay, if She-Bat's been flying around the same way Man-Bat's been flying around, that means, yeah, she's topless. We can't quite have that in a kid's record.
Right, and you know, they kind of did that on the animated series, because there was an episode where Man-Bat came back, and you're like, oh, it's Man-Bat, and they showed him, you know, just like he had always appeared, but then they revealed, no, that's not Langstrom, that's Francine, and then when they show her after the reveal, they make sure that she's got remnants of her shirt covering her chest. But before they didn't, so they were really playing fast and loose with the censors on that one. But I think it's kind of funny, too, that, you know, Francine She just took a drink into the lab and accidentally picked up a beaker and drank it, which...
Yeah. A little care. I wouldn't just pick... I don't know. If I was in somebody's lab, I don't think I'd just be picking up random things and drinking them. I mean, doesn't he have a refrigerator somewhere? Like, you get a, you know, get a Pepsi or get a thing of water. I wouldn't just grab test tubes and just start slurping things down. I don't know about that.
Yeah, the animated version, when they adapted a similar story, that same episode, there was a broken beaker that she went to pick up, and then the liquid got into a cut in her hand.
Oh, there you go. See? Those guys. They were so good.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys always figure out a better way to to make it work. But yeah, I just love this one so much. And the Robin, you know, being so, you know, put out with, you know, jokingly put out with Batman that he hasn't introduced, you know, officially introduced him to his friends. You know, I love that. Yeah.
It really is Robin meets Man-Bat. I mean, this story. I mean, it's a Batman story, but it really is about the two of them meeting up. I mean, because it is done as this weird sort of flashback structure where you know, Man-Bat already exists at this point and stuff. So yeah, it's really, really solid. I've always thought that Man-Bat is a character that like creators love and not so much fans, because it's like I just think he keeps getting. I mean, I always liked the character, but I could see why he's maybe a little fanciful for the Batman universe. But he has gotten, I mean, we talked about over on the Who's Who show that he was drawn in Who's Who by Michael Golden, you know, and he drew them in the Batman family strips. And of course, as you just mentioned, the animated series, Man-Bat is the villain ostensibly in the very first episode.
Yeah.
Of Batman the animated series. I mean, talk about, that would not be the character you think you would start with. But obviously, Bruce Timm and those other guys were fans of him to give him that kind of a showcase that he's the very first villain in the series.
Yeah, I think they looked at that and thought, "Hey, all the other big guys have been done on the '60s show or the different animated series that Filmation did and Super Friends and what can we do that'll set us apart?"
Right.
And you know, going straight back to a Neil Adams created character is a good way to win the diehard fans over, you know, because. I mean, Neil Adams basically, you know, the famous story is Neil Adams came to Julius Schwartz and said, "Hey, you need to create a character called Man-Bat." And he's like, "Why do we need to create a character called Man-Bat?" "Because if you don't, Marvel will create a character called Man-Bat." And he's like, okay. And he's like, "Well, what is this Man-Bat? Well, what if he's a guy that's like literally like a humanoid bat?" And he's like, "Okay, I'll get Frank Robbins on it." You know, basically. And that's how it – and some people are like, "Well, Man-Bat's just a – DC's version of the Lizard." Well, yeah, but DC's version of the Lizard is also just, you know, it's basically the Jekyll and Hyde meets a werewolf,
yeah,
too.
Everybody's got everybody's versions of everybody. The Swamp Thing, Man Thing.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, Quicksilver, Flash.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
Yeah, Aquaman, Namor.
Namor. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to, you know, I felt a little too close to home, Chris, but thank you for that.
So, sorry. Well, I mean, Aquaman, you know, obviously Aquaman, it turned out better for DC than it did for Marvel on that one.
That's true.
The fact that those guys went with it's great. Now, I will say, though, the way that they interpreted Man-Bat, I think, has affected – since they created a more monstrous Man-Bat, that's kind of been the go-to, you know – the very humanoid, I mean, comparatively humanoid Man-Bat we see here, the original version, that's kind of gone. You never get a Man-Bat that looks this, I mean, it still would be kind of weird standing next to this guy, I think. You know, even for Batman and Robin, who are used to some weird stuff. But yeah, nowadays Man-Bat's just straight up a giant, like, monster. Like, it's the difference between, like, a, you know, Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman versus American Werewolf in London type werewolf.
Right, you know, it's
like that evolution of you have to go like completely monstrous nowadays to appeal to the fans. And I remember Andrew played the Arkham games, and their version of Man-Bat is just disgusting. I mean, he is a hideous looking, nasty. He looks like a little bit like Gary Oldman's bat form in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
But worse, you know, like even more. Ugh. Yeah. So, it's nice to see good old fashioned Man-Bat here.
I had the Man-Bat action figure from the BTAS line, And that's a beautiful figure, because if you press the button on his chest, like, he flaps his wings.
Yeah.
And it's that Bruce Timm design. It's really, I mean, you really got to be impressed. I mean, that whole line was impressive, but that had to be a particularly difficult and expensive sculpt, and probably for a figure that didn't sell a whole lot. So it was always one of my favorites. It was a great, great toy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that figure, the proportions on that character are so, I mean, Bruce Timm's always got, you know, huge upper bodies with smaller legs, but they took that to extreme with
Man-Bat. Yeah, he's got those tiny little legs. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a cool figure. It's a great adventure. It's really one of their best. So, yeah, and I'm glad we talked about it many years ago, but I really wanted to do it, you know, officially for the Power Records podcast. So do we have anything else you want to say about Robin Meets Man-Bat before we move on?
Oh, I just again, this is why I love Power Records. I mean, this story in particular, that album. I mean, I had other Power Record albums and book and records and stuff, but this story on that album is just wonderful. And I do have to say this: Ryan and I on Nightcast did a crossover with the Overlooked Dark Knight with Andy Leyland and Michael Bailey. And we discussed how in the 70s it was just a thing for Batman to take a run on the beach. Because
that's right.
The Power Records album that this is on shows Batman and Robin like running on the beach together, taking a nighttime jog. And then there's the Treasury comic that shows Batman running on the beach, which is an adaptation of a panel from Batman, the splash page from Batman 251, the Joker's Five-Way Revenge.
Right.
Batman just liked a nice stroll on the beach back in the 70s. I don't know why, but there you go.
Batman does look very awkward on the beach. There's no doubt about that. It kind of reminds me a little bit about so many, this is so off topic, but what that was many, many years ago when Richard Nixon was president, which actually wasn't that far off from when these Power Records were created. When Nixon was president, they apparently wanted to do some shots of him just looking like a relaxed guy because they thought it would help his public image. So they had him do a photograph session down on the beach, but he was wearing a suit and like business shoes. So it's just completely like, what the hell's he doing? Why is he on the beach in a suit? It is, you know. So that's how Batman just does not look right on a beach. That just doesn't fit at all. But you know, when it's drawn by Neil Adams, it kind of works.
In our downtime, Pat and I like to go to the beach in our full suits and dresses and take in the sun. It's very nice and relaxing.
Me and Haldeman like to listen to some Power Records in the meantime. There's a 3-minute gap on your Man-Bat record, Chris. So all right, we're getting really goofy here. So. That's going to do it for Robin Meets Man-Bat. I will say one last thing. If you ever want to see a live-action person in as a bat hybrid, check out the god-awful 1972 movie, The Twilight People, which is a low, super zero-budget ripoff of The Island of Dr. Moreau. There features a guy in that movie who is a bat, half-man, half-bat creature, and he flies around with his wings. It's a god-awful movie, but it's goofily funny.
I haven't seen that movie, but it was featured on a YouTube channel I like to watch called Dark Corners that talks about bad horror movies.
Oh, it's awful.
And it showed that guy, and I'm like, holy cow, was somebody reading Detective Comics back then? I mean, it's like,
he looks like Jamie Farr as a bat creature. That's what it looks like. It's all my interests combined into one. Pam Grier is in it, which is why I hunted it down in the first place. But yeah, check it out. I think you can at least find clips of it on YouTube, because that's the main effect in that movie is the bat guy. They had very little money to spend, but they spent the money on this guy flapping around. So that's so far until maybe, you know, we have another Batman movie coming, maybe 2-3 films into Matt Reeves's Batman tenure, we'll get Man-Bat. Who knows?
Oh, that's, you know, because I mean, honestly, at this point, who's left that they haven't done? You know,
Mad Hatter. God damn it. Mad Hatter. Love that character. He's never been done in any of the movies. Do Mad Hatter. Come on.
Yeah, I love David Wayne as a Mad Hatter on the
60s. Great on that. Yes. They need to do Mad Hatter. Absolutely.
Yeah, so. You're right. Mad Hatter is the guy. Yeah, but after that, let's have Man-Bat.
After that, Man-Bat. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, let's move on to our second Batman adventure. This one stars the Riddler, and it is called If Music Be the Food of Death.
Batman and Robin match wits with the Riddler. in a game where the stakes are life itself. If music be the food of death. One sunny day in April, Dick Grayson, home from college for spring vacation, strolls in Gotham City's famous Center Park. Glancing up, he sees a small airplane overhead, skywriting, tracing a strange message in the sky.
Gee, what does that say?
Young man, can you make out what that plane is writing?
I think so, but it doesn't make any sense.
What makes the car go? Is that what it says?
That's what it says.
How odd. It sounds like a riddle.
Sure does. Hey, a riddle. Wow. Excuse me, ma'am.
Well, goodbye. He must be a track star. I never saw anyone run that fast.
A very short time later, a door flies open in the study of Bruce Wayne.
Batman!
Dick, what's wrong?
Not Dick, not now. Time for Robin and Batman.
Oh?
The Riddler.
Where?
I saw a riddle in the sky, a plane skywriting.
Trying to reach me?
Sure. Wants to give you a clue, as usual, to what he's going to do.
So, he's loose again.
The dope? Won't he ever learn?
Don't underestimate him, Robin. He's a brilliant criminal. What was the riddle?
What makes the car go?
What makes the car go? That's not a riddle. Not a whole one.
I know. There's just one answer. Gasoline. But it doesn't make sense.
Gasoline. Of course.
Hmm?
After quick preparations, the dynamic duo, Batman and Robin, peer through masks at Gotham City, slipping away beneath them as they soar in the Batcopter over Gotham Harbor, headed out to sea.
Where are we going, Batman?
To meet a ship.
A ship?
A huge tanker, due to arrive today from the Middle East. Remember the question, what makes the car go? The ship's cargo is gasoline, a cargo as precious as gold anywhere in the world.
Wow! You think the Riddler would try to steal a ship?
Why not? The bigger the better, it's just his style.
We're almost there. Look, on the horizon. Isn't that a tanker?
That's it. Now look for a smaller craft. Oh.
Batman, behind us, a plane. They're shooting at us.
And hitting us. The motor is skipping. We're losing control.
Its power gone, the Batcopter sinks toward the water. Then, just offshore, the Batman spies a small deserted island, not much more than a sandbar. Skillfully, he steers the copter there and lets it settle. As they climb from their disabled craft, the Batman and Robin see the Riddler. He's in a powerboat in the water and speaks to them through a bullhorn.
Thank you, Batman, for falling into my trap. How obliging. And you, Robin, how nice to destroy you both at once. Oh, I'm not interested in gasoline. No, I'm going to steal something else. Far more valuable with you out of the way. The island you are on is mined with explosives, set to go off in 5 minutes. If you approach the water to escape anywhere but one place, you will touch off a mine. The one place not mined is the little pier. You see it? With the escape boat tied up? Yes? No, no, don't run for it. No. The boat is booby-trapped, too. Well, however, I'm always fair. You can deactivate the bomb in the boat and escape if you solve the riddle there. Goodbye forever, Batman.
The Batman and Robin race to the pier and find a metal box with wires leading from it to explosives in the boat. On the box are seven levers, labeled with the letters A through G. And below the levers, a sign with the riddle,
what letter is like an escape?
Very funny.
Don't talk, think. We have to pull the lever with the letter that answers the riddle. A letter like an escape.
We have 2 minutes.
Think! Wait. I think I have it.
What if you don't?
We die a little earlier. Here goes nothing. Or everything.
Hey, nothing happened. You did it. How?
Don't talk. Let's go.
Quickly, they untie the boat, rev the motor, and race away.
Never kids around.
How did you know the letter was G? How is G like an escape?
Because G makes one gone.
Oh.
Look for the next riddle. It should be in the boat.
Oh, all right. He couldn't help leaving a clue for us if we escaped, could he? Right, sure. Right here in the toolkit. A note to Batman.
What does it say?
Not one, but two riddles. Here's the first. When does pulling a bowstring draw crowds instead of arrows? I've got it, Batman.
Yes?
When it's pulled by a violinist.
Good, Robin, good. What's the other one?
Why is a speeding train like a citizen of Moscow?
Of course, of course.
What is it?
They're both Russian.
Commissioner Gordon here.
This is the Batman, Commissioner Gordon.
Batman, how are you?
Listen carefully. We haven't much time. Our friend, the Riddler, will try his biggest heist tonight.
The Riddler, eh?
Tonight, the great Russian violinist, Igor Pashevsky, will play his first American concert. His violin is the most valuable Stradivarius in the world. The Riddler will try to steal that violin before the eyes of the world.
Oh? That's what he thinks.
In Gotham Hall, a huge crowd fills the entire auditorium. Some stand in the aisles, waiting for Pashevsky to appear on stage. Bruce Wayne, socialite and patron of the arts, sits in his private box with Dick Grayson. As the house lights dim, all others eagerly watch the stage. They scan the audience for a sign of the Riddler.
He'll never try it. Police are everywhere. At the doors, in the wings, the dressing rooms.
Here's Pashevsky. We'll soon see. Smoke. He's trying to start a panic. Quick.
And Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson slip behind the curtain of their box to become the dynamic duo. None too soon.
Fire! Fire!
Panic spreads through the crowd like a plague as smoke begins to roll from the back of the auditorium. Pashevsky stops playing, confused.
Your attention! Attention, please!
Oh, look! Up there! It's Robin!
Yes, it's Robin!
The crowd looks up to see Robin perched on the rail of the private box.
It's just smoke, a trick. Please stay in your seats. There is no fire.
But pandemonium is erupting. Nothing will hold it back.
Robin, where is the Batman?
Leaving Robin to handle the crowd, Batman has sprung to the stage to protect the musician.
Mr. Pachevsky, your violin.
What is happening? A man with a mask.
Your violin. Is it safe?
Oh, da. A policeman. I gave it to him. He came to me during the fire when it started. For safekeeping, I left it with this man.
A policeman.
The fat man hears the Riddler's laugh. He sees him in police uniform carrying a violin case, slipping out a side door surrounded by his thugs.
Bubba, door on the left.
I'm on my way.
Fighting their way through the crowd, they catch up to the last of the thugs. But get to the street too late. The Riddler is racing away in a car. From his window, he yells back.
Too bad, Batman. One more try. The key of A. Yes, the key of A.
Quick, Batman. The Batmobile.
The key of A. It must be the answer to a riddle. We're supposed to guess the riddle.
He's getting away. Let's go.
Ah, yes. I think I see.
Can we go now?
Yes. But not in the Batmobile. It's walking distance. You get Commissioner Gordon. I'll go greet the Riddler.
Where?
In Igor Poshevsky's hotel room.
A darkened room in the Conrad Hotel. If anyone were in the room, he would see a shadow all across the window. A hulking figure looms outside it on the fire escape. Pries the window open quietly. He carries a violin case. Steps softly into the room. A man in a strange costume, covered with question marks. Then, from the dark, he hears a voice.
Good evening, Mr. Enigma. You kept me waiting just to change your clothes. You must want to be caught a lot. Your riddle was easy. I read the papers, too.
Oh. You won't catch me, you human rodent.
I read all the interviews with Poshevsky. Here's your riddle question. What key unlocks the door to Poshevsky, right? That led me to this door.
Fat lot of good it'll do you. Fat lot.
Your answer, the key of A, is the key to Poshevsky because his favorite concerto, which he wrote himself, is written in that key.
Head of the class, Batman. Now I'm going to...
Don't go to sleep, Riddler. We have company.
The door opens. Lights go on. Robin and Commissioner Gordon are in the room.
Hey, it's him. You got him.
And there's the violin. Why in heaven's name did he bring it here?
Now, Commissioner, where is the last place we would all think to look? He planned to hide it here, under Poshevsky's nose, then come back at a later date.
I see. Very clever. But you figured it out.
How, Batman? What was the riddle?
For once today, Robin, we're not in a rush. You have plenty of time to figure it out.
And that was If Music Be the Food of Death, the sole Batman audio adventure starring the Riddler. And Chris, I got to tell you, if Man-Bat is your favorite, Robin Meets Man-Bat is your favorite power record, this one is my, it's not my favorite power record all the time, but it is my favorite Batman record. I love this one. I love their characterization of the Riddler. He's kind of a combo between Joker and Scarecrow. In a way, they kind of muffle his voice a little, but he's got that sort of thing. I mean, clearly inspired by Frank Gorshin, as understandably. I love the adventure. I think the story is great. I love all the stuff about the music keys. Like, that to me is like, that's aiming a little higher than your average 5-year-old, you know, like a 5-year-old doesn't know anything about music keys or what this is. This is my favorite. I think this could have been a great Batman comic book.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we've discussed in the past how hard it is. Writers have a hard time writing the Riddler because it's hard to come up with those riddles and to make them challenging, but also make them to where, you know, it's like, oh, you can kind of figure it out, or after they tell you, you can piece it together, you know. And they do a really fantastic job with this. I agree. I was really the first time I heard this was, I think, on your blog, and I had, you know, I didn't have this as a kid. And yeah, I was really super impressed. But yeah, the Riddler, man, if I had encountered this version of the Riddler as a kid, I might have been like actually scared of him, because he definitely takes Gorshin up to 11, and, yep. And Gorshin was already at 10.5 on the show.
That's right.
You know, so I mean, because he was definitely the scariest, most manic of the characters on the TV show. He made the Joker look tame in, mm-hmm. in scenes in the movie when they're together in the 66 movie. And he never, you know, Gorshin would kind of go into those kind of, you know, low dialogue monologues and then ramp up into a, you know, that type mm-hmm. thing. But this guy just stays like the whole time. Yeah. You know? It's like, whoa.
I have no idea who betrays the Riddler in this audio adventure. But boy, he does a great job. Again, I love when he's taunting Batman and Robin, and he does that, and he's like, he's really into it. And again, the idea of stealing like the Stradivarius is really great. We get an appearance, and we get a audio appearance by Commissioner Gordon, which I always appreciate. It features, to me, one of my favorite lines of dialogue from any piece of Batman media ever, is when they're talking about solving the riddle, and Robin's like, "What if we get it wrong?" And Batman goes, "We die a little earlier." It's such a Batman line. He's just like so nonchalant. We die a little earlier. Like, wow, like that's exactly the Batman that I like. He's just this kind of hard ass, but he's kind of kidding a little bit too. I mean, I think this is really brilliantly constructed. And I will also say it features like my favorite kind of cut where Batman goes up to the violinist, and the violinist is like, "Well, no, I gave my violin to some policeman." And Batman goes, "What policeman?" And then they cut to the laughter. Like, mm-hmm. You could totally see that in the TV show. I used to listen to this one. I mean, listen to all the Power records, especially the Batman ones, over and over. But this one, like you talked about how you could act out the Robin meets Man-Bat. I committed this to memory. Just the word Stradivarius I'd never heard before until this record. I listened this one to like you till it was warped. I just thought this was so beautifully done. Unfortunately, it was never done as a book and record set, which really breaks my heart that this never got the full comic book treatment. It was released as a 45. You can see the 45 over on my Power Records blog. It's a really nice shot. I've got the Riddler, and he's got his hand out, and there's a confused, baffled-looking Batman in his palm. And then it was put on an LP with the Catwoman, Joker, and Scarecrow stories, where you see on the sleeve Batman is jumping into the frame, and you see all the four villains surrounding him. And it's drawn by Neil Adams, so it looks fantastic. But, man, I'd wish this had been a full comic book. I would have loved it.
Yeah, because Neil Adams never got to – this is the only time Neil Adams got to draw the Riddler. I mean, he never drew him in the comics. You know,
really? He never did the Riddler?
Not a Riddler story,
oh,
no.
Oh, wow. I don't think I knew that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I mean, now he may have done the Riddler in his more recent Batman but classically, yeah, he never got to do the Riddler. And – And, you know, in fact, there's a lot of the classic Bat villains he didn't do, you know, he might have drawn covers with them and things like that and merchandise. So it would have been if they had done a comic, it would probably been our only chance to see Neil Adams do a Riddler comic book.
Oh,
so
man.
That's double shame. You know,
yeah.
I want to say, you know, this one here kind of straddles the feel of the TV show a little bit.
Absolutely.
With the Bronze Age Batman, which I like, and the music when Dick, you know, after he sees the plane skywriting the Riddle, he runs off. That sounds like something Nelson Riddle would have put in Nelson Riddle would have put into the TV show. I mean, you can totally see Burt Ward running into, you know, Adam West's study, and you know, mm-hmm. with that music, and it's great. I love the line that Robin says, "The dope. Won't he ever learn?"
Yeah.
I laughed at that. I'm like, I love the fact that, you know, Batman's more, you know, he's not actually going to call these guys, and he might call them a lunatic or a madman or something, but Robin's just going to, you know, he's going to call them a dope.
Trash talk them, yeah. Yeah. I also like the line of it in the opening where Dick Grayson sees the riddle and runs off, and you have that woman who's like, boy, he must be a track star. He ran so fast, which I like that. I always like that, you know, to give it a little bit of verisimilitude, to borrow a word from another one of our shows, that, like, of course, you know, that Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson are ridiculously fit, able-bodied athletes, and occasionally a regular citizen will notice that, right. You know, boy, he's just a college student, but boy, that kid can really book. And you're like, yeah, because he's Robin, you know. And even I like that person notices. That's a great detail. And as you said, the riddles are really good. Like, they're really hard to do. And I love that it ends with a sort of cliffhanger where it doesn't solve the riddle. Where Robin's like, well, how did you solve it, Batman? What was the riddle? Batman's like, oh, we'll tell you later, chum. I thought that's a great ending, too. It was fantastic. And Robin's all like, oh, Batman.
Yeah. There's some clever bits, like the Riddler's basically playing Jeopardy with them. He gives them the answer, and they have to figure out what the riddle is when he's like the key of A, you know? So it's like they're mixing it up in this one, too. And I mean, the death trap that the Riddler puts him in on the island, I mean, that's like – wow, I mean the TV show didn't even have the budget for that, but it's such a great you know, he crashes the Batcopter and then they're stuck on this island, and then they got to solve a riddle to get off and get the boat to take off, and I mean it's a real nail biter. I mean, and like you said, with Batman's dialogue, you know, Robin's kind of — I kind of like it because it's so dire that Robin's freaking out a little bit, and Batman's being, you know, calm about it, and I kind of like that, you know, that they're actually showing Robin breaking a sweat this. It adds to it. One thing I will say that I like the voices of Batman and Robin here. Now, I prefer the ones on Robin Meets Man-Bat because that's more what I grew up with, but I do like the voice actors of Batman and Robin here, and of course we talked about the Riddler. I will say, just it just popped in my head, and I could be completely wrong, but Commissioner Gordon, he sounds a bit like the magician in Frosty the Snowman to me. messy, you know, that guy. It just popped in my head. It's like, I don't know. That might have been I don't think that. No, Paul Frees was Santa Claus in that. So I don't know who the magician was in that one. We'd have to look it up. But, you know, it could be, you know, we've tried to pinpoint. And sometimes some of our listeners somehow know who these voice actors are. So if you guys know who any of these voice actors are, please – write in, leave a comment, and let us know, because if I do find out that's right, I'll be like, God, I need to get out and get a life or something.
You know, the voice actor community was relatively small at that time, so it's entirely possible. You know, I mean, for good lords, I mean, for Pete's sakes, the mark of the Man-Wolf Spider-Man is Speed Racer. You know, I mean, so you never know. It's quite possible. I mean, sometimes if you hear stuff, you could sort of make that connection in your brain. And you can just hear it, and you're just, oh, yeah, that sounds exactly like this other person. So it might be. Could you never know.
And we know the Rankin Bass, a lot of the voice cast, there was a crossover with the 60s Marvel cartoons. Mm-hmm. Like Paul Soles, the voice of Spider-Man, was Hermie the Elf and Rudolph. Right. So, you know, and you know, a lot of those guys went and did stuff in New York, too, and that's where Power Records was, you know, at. And so, yeah, very, very, very possible. Yeah, so, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I just love this adventure. I just think they really did a great job with the Riddler. He was always one of my favorite characters. And again, like we talked about with Man-Bat, I hope that they do Riddler in this next run of movies. In fact, he's in the next movie, right? Isn't it? I think that's Paul Dano is playing the Riddler in the Matt. So I'm excited about that, because basically the Riddler's only ever gotten that one bite at the apple, which was in Batman Forever. So I'm super excited. But yeah, I love this story just so much. I just think as you said, it really is a nice cross pollination of the 60s TV show and the 70s Batman comics.
Yeah, it's just it's a perfect synthesis of it. And yeah, like you said, I wish they'd done a comic, but it's another fantastic. We got two winners here for sure.
Absolutely. So yeah, well, we are now officially done with Batman Power Records. We have done them all on this show, Gorilla City and Mystery of the Scarecrow Corpse and Stacked Cards and Catwoman's Revenge. We've covered them all at this point. There's nothing new, unless there's a Batman Power record out there we don't know about. Fingers crossed. We have officially wrapped up Batman for the Power Records podcast. It makes me a little sad, but at the same time, you know, these things are so much fun. And I thought, yeah, if we're going to redo them, let's redo them together. It'll be really fun. So that's going to do it for the Batman Audio Adventures. So I guess we should move on to listener feedback from the previous episode, which was, of course, Power Records podcast number 23, which was our Little Women and Robin Hood episode. So we're going to take comments from the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. So, Chris, you want to start off?
Sure, yeah. Alan W. Wright wrote in to say, Alan Dale is also used as a narrator, balladeer, in the live-action 1952 Disney film The Story of Robin Hood and His Merry Men, played by Elton Hayes, and in the more familiar 1973 Disney cartoon, voiced by Roger Miller. It doesn't surprise me to see he's pulling the same duty here. I hope the Howard Pyle book that Chris had as a kid was an addition with Pyle's own illustrations, as he was a true master of the form. There have been a lot of Robin Hood books that stick Pyle's name on the cover but use neither his text or illustrations. Well, I actually got the book out just to avoid confusion, and just because I didn't have it in my hand last time. And the one I've got is illustrated by Lawrence Beale Smith. So, yeah, but it's wonderfully illustrated. So it might not be Howard Pyle himself, but I love it. So there you go.
We got a comment from Ryan Daly, someone we're kind of familiar with, Chris. He says, For a long time, our video library only included three Disney animated movies, and one of them was Robin Hood. When I wasn't watching the Star Wars trilogy or Aliens or Eddie Murphy's Delirious at far too young an age, I was watching The Merry Adventures of a Sly Fox Named Robin Hood and a Mandolin Playing Rooster singing Golly What a Day. More than three decades later, that's my iconic version of Robin Hood. The live-action version that I've seen most is Prince of Thieves, probably because it seemed to have so many curiosities about it. Robin Hood's non-accent, his black sidekick, Christian Slater basically playing himself, a witch, the Bryan Adams song that I mentioned on Firewater Records. That was my first CD. God, what a strange movie. Now that deserves a minute-by-minute podcast. But even so, to me, Robin Hood is always a fox. What would Disney have done if they'd made an animated Zorro with anthropomorphic animals? Great episode. Loved hearing Cindy on the show. Yes, me too, Ryan.
So, yeah, I've always loved the Disney Robin Hood, too, and I'm kind of surprised it didn't show up. We didn't mention it on the episode because I think that's probably the first version that that I watched, too. And I kind of tend to go back to that one as well. And I will admit that I got a soft spot in my heart for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, because that's one of the first movies Cindy and I went on a date to see. That the Bryan Adams song is our song. So that's when we were starting to date. So I know it's like it's a well-produced movie, but it's Hollywood bad in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's over-Hollywooded in a lot of ways, but Christian Slater dropping the F-bomb in the movie, he cleared it, it's still, I can't help it. I still kind of like it. It's, and I know I probably by all rights shouldn't, but I enjoy it. So,
hey, no need to apologize. It's a very popular movie. So, Chuck Coletta writes in, he says, I've got a soft spot for Costner's Robin Hood. See him too. What okay. I recall mostly is the audience in the theater bursting into applause when Sean Connery turns up for his cameo at the end. His mere presence made everyone so glad. That's star power.
Oh yeah. That's like one of the best cameos ever. You're not like, yeah. Holy crap. It's like, you know, that was that must've been a callback from the Untouchables or something. Kevin Costner said, hey, could you like show up for like just like half a day and play King Richard, please?
it's a darn shame. No one's been able to convince Connery to come back and do another movie again. Cause you know, he's just sitting there in retirement. His last movie is The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something. Like, oh no, come on, Sean, yeah. You gotta please do something else. So, but Dan Doherty writes in and he says, I keep hoping Rob and Chris will eventually do an entire episode of the Power Records podcast on the Spidey Super Stories album from 1977. Despite being born in 1984, I had this record growing up. In fact, my childhood copy is still in my collection, and last time I checked, it still plays. It features eight stories narrated by Morgan Freeman, who is Easy Reader and the Electric Company, and is gorgeous cover art by John Romita Sr. That iconic image of Spider-Man still sticks in my mind's eye as the most perfect representation of classic Spider-Man. Yeah, we got to get to that one of these days. We haven't covered that record at all, and that is a really fun record.
Yeah, I have never – I never had that as a kid, but I love the Electric Company growing up. And when Morgan Freeman, like, first started showing up in movies, I'm like, Hey, it's Dracula from from the Electric Company, you know. And I think the first thing I remember, I didn't see the movie because I was too young to see it, but the movie that what was the name of that movie that it was Christopher Reeve and Morgan Freeman, and he was like, I think was Morgan Freeman like a pimp or something in that
Street
movie?
Street Smart.
And I remember because I was interested in it because it was Christopher Reeve, and I was paying attention to anything Christopher Reeve was on. He was on Entertainment Tonight or something, and they were talking about his movies. And I remember, you know, seeing Morgan Freeman going, hey, that's the guy from the Electric Company. Mm-hmm. Little did we know, you know, that, you know, the omnipresence of Morgan Freeman. But yeah, we should definitely do that.
Yeah, it's a great record. Absolutely.
Eric wrote in to say, regarding the other books in Alcott's March Family Saga, I still remember a bit from the original British Whose Line Is It Anyway series. In one episode during a round of the improv game Authors, where the four improvisers take turns telling a story, each one adopting the style of a different author, Josie Lawrence announced that she would be narrating in the style of Louisa May Alcott, then explained, for those who don't know, she wrote Little Women, Little Men, and Little Wives, to which the host Clive Anderson quipped, and little else.
Ouch!
Woo!
Oh, man. All right. Well, Eric, Clive Anderson, what enduring classic book did you write, buddy? Come on.
Yeah, has your book been adapted into a movie like four or five times? I don't think so.
Jeez, okay. Brian Washington says, I have known about these adaptations. They even had Moby Dick on the back cover list, but it might not have been released officially. But I stopped at The Amazing Adventures of Hollow Man as far as the series goes. Chris has made mention of the Superman song. It was from the Golden Records in the early 1950s, written by Tom Glaser. The song was eventually paired with Neil Hefti's Batman theme in 1966. The 45 was later issued circa 1975 under Wonderland Records. Incidentally, I have the 1975 record. So that's amazing. Brian has all that information about the companies and release dates. I don't know how he knows all this stuff, but he's very handy with that information.
That must be the version I had. I don't think I have that anymore, but that's – yeah, I've got to get that audio and do – I mean, I could do a whole podcast episode on that about that song because it's such a weird song.
It is.
I we need to get like a round table of Superman fans and just listen to that and just like pick it apart. It'd be fun.
Another Patreon stretch goal. Matt Saroy says, an episode that can truly be referred to as classic. It's incredible how a wide range of genres Peter Pan Power Records presented. I can't wait for the next episode, which I'm assuming will be the Power Records Guide to Basic Home Repair and How to Win Friends and Influence People for Second Graders. you know, I mean, we probably could use a basic home repair considering everybody's staying home right now. That might be handy.
Yeah, that's home repair with the Amazing Spider-Man,
That'd be awesome.
It involves – you don't use nails or hammers. You just web everything.
Yeah, right.
Up,
you can caulk your tub with web fluid.
The bad part is it dissolves in an hour. Our pal Ward Hill Terry wrote in to say, it was nice of you boys to invite Cindy into the tree fort to listen to Little Women.
Ew, girls.
He-Man Woman Haters Club. The Robin Hood selection certainly felt to me to be influenced by the Disney cartoon film. It was refreshing to hear a Robin Hood story that didn't involve the art-told archery contest. The discussion of the literary Power Records reminded me that I had a Treasure Island record, not a Power Records. I'll paw through my collection and see if it's still there. I wonder if that was maybe a Disney, you know, because obviously Disney had made a Treasure Island movie years ago. I wonder if that was one of those Disneyland book and record sets. But possible. I don't know. Gene, our buddy Gene Our pal Gene Hendricks also wrote in, I think the only version of Little Women that I've seen is the 1980s anime one. Yes, I can tie most things back to anime. This was one that we get from the video store fairly regularly, but I haven't seen it in decades. Yeah, that, you know, I don't remember. I know the comic shop I worked at in college, we rented like a lot of anime movies. We had the Tomb of Dracula animated movie there. But I don't remember a Little Women, but who knows, it may have been there and I just didn't know. This is Gene again. Obviously, my favorite version of Robin Hood is the Errol Flynn one, which you can hear all about on Film and Water, episode number 28.
That's right. Oh, wow. God, that was a long time ago. Yeah, I remember we did that. That's right. That's right. That's a good movie.
That's the best.
Yeah. Lizanne Oswald writes in, she says, impressive podcast, most impressive, Little Women. Sorry, I was bored. Sorry. Well, I love Pride and Prejudice. I was not a fan of this, although I can relate to the poor gal with the heels. It continues. You know, they didn't get into that in the movie, but you know, Little Women is eternal. Gotham's Mansion says, Cindy is spot on about power records being great for kids helping kids learn to read. She would be, since she's a professional librarian, although, of course, she's not anymore, right, technically?
Right, yeah, but she's still an educator with children. So,
absolutely. Yeah. But I can offer supporting evidence. I became a Batman fan at 5, and my mom was thrilled, dad not so much, because I was very eager to learn to read so I could collect comics. My mom got me every superhero power record, none of the horror ones, though, book and record set. The sets were very instrumental in me learning to read before and during kindergarten and before I got to first grade. I tested very high in reading levels, and I'm sure I was the only student in kindergarten who knew what a lobotomy was, thanks to stacked cards. As you can tell, I'm definitely a Power Records fan. I may be getting to be too much of a Fire and Water fan, there's no such thing, Gothas, because I never thought I would listen to a podcast about Little Women. I recognize one of the voice actresses was the same lady who portrayed the overly nasal Lois Lane on the Superman records and gave me a mental image of Gladys Kravitz from Bewitched. I do appreciate you guys covering this weird corner of the Power Records universe, but it didn't entice me to read the original novel or watch any of the film adaptations, unless there was some 70s drive-in European sex comedy version of Little Women I don't know about. Hey, there were 70s drive-in versions of fairy tale and Shakespeare plays, so there could be. Think about it. Emmanuel meets Little Women. Since Rob unrelatedly brought up Orson Welles, Rob, did you know that Orson was in a movie with Laura Gemser? Yes, I did know that. We talked about that over on the Laura Gemser episode of Film and War I did with Max. And thank you, Gothos, for getting Laura Gemser mentioned on yet another podcast here on the network.
Oh, man. Jeez. You guys.
He's really indefatigable about that stuff. But, yeah, we scratched that Gemser itch over on Film and Water, so we can put that aside for now. And then Mike Bridges says, I finally got around to listening to this edition of the Power Records podcast, and I got to say, Little Women was a snooze fest. If I had happened to see this book and record as a kid, I would have looked at it in disgust and filed it away from all the superhero records. He says, I suggest investing in a spin clean record cleaner. I have one, and it works great on cleaning records and getting rid of surface noise. There will still be clicks and pops due to scratches, but it probably would eliminate that annoying static sound during Little Women. I have to say, Mike, I appreciate what you're saying, but I like all that crap noise on top of these records. To me, it gives it a little bit extra feeling to it. So I'm kind of happy with the way they sound, even with all the pops and hisses and Frank Strummer, stuff like that. I enjoy all that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
The hum, like it like brings you back, you know.
Yeah,
it's like that's part of it, that's part of the nostalgia for it. If it was super clean, then it might as well just be listening to an MP, I mean, like a clean MP3 off a CD or something,
right,
you know.
Right,
that's
right. Yeah, I kind of like that.
I was gonna say Little Women is you know, I think we've still got the ooh icky girl thing going on amongst some of our listeners here with the Little Women, so.
I understand, and that was why I wanted to do Batman. I was like, all right, we've really put the listeners through the paces the last couple of episodes. Let's do something a little more straight ahead over the plate, which is Batman. One final thing, though, that Mike Bridges sent, he found more Power Records picture discs that they released, because we talked about that they did a Scooby-Doo picture disc, which was, you know, an image of Scooby-Doo and the gang imprinted on the record.
Yeah.
It's really slick looking. And Power Records, or Peter Pan, did picture discs for Casper and Popeye, and you can see them on Google and stuff like that. If you just do an image search, they're really beautiful. They come in these nice sleeves, and the artwork is great. The Casper one features all the Casper characters. I mean, they are really sharp, and it is a damn shame they didn't do these for the Power Records. Could you imagine, like, a Batman picture disc? That would have kicked ass.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I actually got a few years back when Spider-Man Homecoming came out, I got the picture disc of the soundtrack to it. And it's got this really cool illustration, like from the comic style illustration, but like different movie scenes. And it's really sweet. So, yeah, I would have loved to have had – imagine like a Neil Adams picture disc of Batman. It could just been Batman and Robin running on the beach, and they'd just be running around and around and around.
That would have been so – what a missed opportunity. Of course, we don't know that they don't exist. We keep finding new things, so maybe someday. But like I said, I think that is going to do it for this episode of the Power Records podcast. Of course, you can find back episodes of the show on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Stitcher and on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. And we have to thank our supporters on Patreon. If you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to David Branning, David S. Gutierrez, Gord Tolton, and R.W. Lovejoy for their support of the Power Records podcast. So that's going to do it for this episode. Chris, we have been knocking out these Power Records lately. I'm very happy about this.
Yeah, I think part of it's because we're on a break from Superman Movie Minute, so.
That's probably it. I got to get on that Superman 3 sometime.
Yeah. But until then, we're, just doing a lot of Power Records. So there you go.
So like I said, that's going to do it, everybody. Thanks for listening. And until the next episode, drop the needle.
And turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.